and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Norm Shealy. We're going to talk about his new book, Medical Intuition. How did you like that intro, Norm?
Well, thank you very much. You know, by the way, I have another one coming out in about 2 weeks.
No, I didn't know. How do you do all that, Norm?
Well, that's
busier than anybody I know. You run a farm, you write books. Anyway, I was talking about my intro.
And I do research. But other than that,
yes,
I'm bored.
You do. And you build machines.
Right.
You help friends. I mean, you're just an incredible man. Anyway.
Well, I just do. Actually, to be quite honest, I just do what I want to do. And I've always done that to a great extent. I can say I have enjoyed 90% of my life because if I don't like it, I change.
Well, you're a good example for all of us, Norm. You really are.
Well, you know, Eva, there's only one purpose in life, in my opinion, and that is to help other people. Period. End of report. Now, you have to help yourself, and I don't want anybody ever to think that I did not say that. You must take care of yourself first so that you're capable of taking care of other people. But the whole purpose, in my opinion, of being on the planet Earth is to help other people.
I agree. Wonderful thing. Well, I know everybody knows you, but just to give it, please tell us where to find you and where they can get this book before we start talking about it.
Well, of course, I'm at normshealy.com, www if you need it, but most of the time just Norm Shealy, normshealy.com. And they can get all kinds of information there, including my recommendations for almost everything. And my archive newsletters for the last 5 years. They can sign up for my new, my each week newsletter. And, they can go from there because there's lots of stuff there.
I'll say this. Anytime that I know that I recommend somebody to get a supplement or something, and they say, well, which one do I get? I always send them to your storefront because I know if you say it's okay, it's probably a good one, one of the better ones they can pick.
Well, you know, I started doing workshops and lectures in 1974, long before the so-called alternative health movement began. And people always say, well, what do I do? What do I do? So we started something called Self-Help Systems way back in 1974. And if I like it, we carry it. If I don't like it, we don't have it. And in general, we have a wide variety of products there, of course. But if I can get what I want, a type of supplement, from a company called Now, N-O-W. It's what I call a generic health food supplement company. And it's much less expensive than many of the better names. And their products are good. So that we always go with Now whenever we can. But we can't always get it, and then we get it from the next best thing we can find.
Okay. So tell us what medical intuition is. You're the father of that, as far as I'm, well, you and Edgar Cayce. What is that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Eva. In 1972, I attended a meeting of the Edgar Cayce Foundation, really the Association of Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach, and I learned all kinds of interesting things that, as a neurosurgeon, I'd never even thought of course, including colonics and color therapy and all kinds of interesting stuff. But the most important was I had been thinking since I was in college and worked with J.B. Ryan at Duke University that it would be nice if we could do, quote, psychic diagnosis, and that's what we called it in those days. And I had in 1972, I was consulting with a Fortune 500 company, which remains unnamed at their request, because they don't want anybody to know that they funded me to do a study of quote, psychic diagnosis, as long as I never mentioned their name. I had a ball. I went to 75 people who had a shingle out one way or another. It was, and I was referred to them by word of mouth, who did, you know, private intuitive, what I would prefer to call intuitive readings for people. And I devised a test, and I found that these people were 50% accurate in general, which was five times chance, which is still highly statistically significant. But five of the people were 70 to 75% accurate, which is, you know, very close to what the average physician is when the average physician has done a physical exam and a history. And so that was the beginning. And I met a wonderful black psychic from Chicago, Henry Rucker, who although he was only about 70% accurate in making a diagnosis, was the best one-on-one counselor I've ever known in my life. I've never known anybody who could spend an hour with a patient and make as much progress as Henry. And then I met Dr. Robert Lightman, a physician internist from currently from Baltimore. And Bob was 80% accurate on physical diagnosis, but 96% accurate on psychological diagnosis. He trained with a psychiatrist for 3 years. And then, of course, in 1984, I met Carolyn Mace. And Carolyn is 93% accurate, either mentally, psychologically, or physically. And Carolyn and I work together now since that time. In fact, we're doing a workshop in about 2.5 weeks in Tucson. And in 1988, Carolyn and I had been doing workshops, and so we wrote the book, Creation of Health. And she would write her chapter from the intuitive point of view, and I from the medical point of view. And I said, we can't call it psychic diagnosis. That just turns too many people off. And we didn't want to talk about clairvoyance because the same thing. So I created the word medical intuitive when we wrote the book. And so a medical intuitive is someone who, with knowing nothing but the patient's name, and birth date, address, or something like that, can give you a true physical and physiological diagnosis. In other words, whatever is wrong, they can make the diagnosis in terms that a physician will understand. You know, if they've got cancer in the lung, it's cancer in the lung. It's not a black spot in the lung. If they've got diabetes, it's diabetes. It's not a black spot in the pancreas, et cetera, et cetera. So they have to know the location of the problem and the actual electrical, chemical abnormality. And so Carolyn and I began teaching this way back in the late 80s and through the 90s. And so we created the American Board of Scientific Medical Intuition. And we test people. In fact, our next exam is the last week in August of this year. And if a person is 75% accurate on 40 cases, 40 patient names, then they are, quote, board certified as a medical intuitive. Now, unfortunately, we should have copyrighted the term medical intuitive when we did it, registered it or something back in 1988, because there, at one time, were 12 million people on the internet listed as medical intuitives, and most of them are not. They're space cadets. They couldn't tell you the sun is shining as far as I'm concerned. And I've had many of them write me, and they turn out to be, most of the time, really pathetically bad. So in order to be sure, if you want to get a medical intuitive reading, it really should be someone who's been certified, board certified, so that you know they're at least 75% accurate. And so anybody's interested, if they want the exam, they can go to absmi.com and get all the information, or sign up for my newsletter, because there will be a newsletter on that in the next month.
Are they able to also diagnose illness in advance before it gets here?
And that's an interesting question. Yes, indeed. Now, that's one of the problems, of course, medically. I'll never forget a case Carolyn diagnosed, this is 20 years ago. It was a young dentist whom I knew very well. I knew his father. His father had been, you know, my dentist years ago. I thought he had cancer of the pancreas, but we could not prove it medically. And Carolyn unequivocally said he's got cancer of the pancreas, but it was 3 months later before it had grown big enough for our test to make the diagnosis. And another time, in one of my patients, she said to me, if he does not get over his depression, he'll be dead by the end of August.
And what happened?
And he was. So, yeah, a good one can certainly pre-diagnose or tell you that the, you know, the issues are there adequately, that if you don't change quickly, like yesterday, it's going to happen.
All right. Now, when someone is trying to learn how to do this, is their vocabulary important?
Well, yes. In fact, when I first started working with Carolyn, she had no medical terminology. And, I mean, she sort of had a general knowledge of anatomy, and most people have to some extent. But she would say things like, it looks as if there are holes in the bone. Well, I quickly taught her that that's osteoporosis. And she would say, it looks as if there's concrete in the spine. Well, that turns out to be a bony fusion of the spine. That's what it looks like. It looks as if you just splashed a big handful of concrete in there. And so very quickly, she learned the terminology. It took about a year. And I do teach a course in, you know, sort of fundamentals of medical intuition practice. So we can go through some cases, and I can present the actual diagnosis after the person do their intuition.
Now, how do you teach them to do it? Do you teach them to do it where they have a knowing, or do you teach them how? Are they all different? Does some people have auditory, and some people have visual, or some people have knowing, or do you try to teach them all the same? Does that make sense?
No. It makes perfect sense. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, in my own case, I say, you know, sometimes I see. Sometimes I get a vivid, vivid picture. Sometimes I get words, and sometimes I just know. Abstractly, that's it. And everybody's different, and each person has his or her, you know, own talent and ability. And I encourage people to develop that and work with whatever works for them. Some people get metaphors, and they are the most difficult because, you know, they get a picture of something that has nothing directly that we would think of as related to a disease, but they have to learn what that means.
Okay. Now, how do you, once you figure something out, do you know if it's happening now or in the future or in the past even?
Well, again, that's the same kind of thing, because timing, especially of the future, is very, very difficult. In fact, when Carolyn told me this man would be dead by the end of August, I didn't ask what year. And it was a year and a half later instead of that year. But it was exactly on August 31st, the following year.
Wow.
And so you have to sort of learn to, refine your answer when you see it. And again, different strokes for different folks. Some people recognize a time element, and some people do not.
Okay. Now, when a lot of medical intuitives, when they get their abilities or develop their abilities, they also get the abilities to know which thing that you need to use to treat it.
That's correct. Edgar Cayce, of course. Yeah, Edgar Cayce is the perfect example of that. I don't think there's ever been anybody who covered the broad field the way Cayce did, where he did well over 14,000 readings, of which almost 10,000 had to do with health and disease. And, of course, he often gave the treatment. And, again, much more complex than most people do. But certainly, I think what good intuitives do more often than not is see a karmic or psychological cause. of the problem. And they're quite good at that.
Do you encourage people to do it more on themselves? Is that possible? Can they have too much? Like, you know, I have this ability somewhat, and I find it hard to do it for myself.
Well, and that's too much information. I'm glad you brought that up, because basically, you know, for the last year and a half, I've been doing workshops all over the country on medical intuition for people. And I always say, it begins at home. It begins with yourself, because basically, many people block their own internal signals, if you will. I think it's critically important that people learn to feel, sense, see, know what's going on in their own bodies. And, of course, that's the kind of thing I've been teaching for 40 years.
So how do you teach someone to discern? I find if I have too much information, particularly about myself, if I have no information, I can do it. But if
right.
I have too much information, I can make stuff up in my head.
And that's, of course, part of the training, is to learn how to detach from all the, what I call kerfuffle, the wonderful British term, kerfuffle, that's taking place in your own mind.
So how do you teach them to do that? How do you teach them to acutely discern?
Okay, so the first thing is to learn to feel your own body and do it over and over and over and over until it gets boringly monotonous, but you know. So you get this, what I call the sensory feedback. What is your face telling you? Tune into it. Jaws, neck, throat, shoulders, arms, hands, chest, breast, abdomen, back, buttocks, pelvis, sexual organs, thighs, calves, and feet. And when, as you learn to do this, you can do it that fast. And you know whether you are carrying tension, discomfort, or no feeling at all. Now, when you get no feeling from part of the body, that is the ultimate block. That is armoring in the Wilhelm Reich concept of the term. So, you just have to practice feeling your body under all kinds of circumstances and detaching from all of the day-to-day and year-to-year concerns that you have. And of course, one of the great things that people can do to train themselves in this is to do a very basic exercise called autogenic training. Autogenic training actually began 99 years ago, the research on it. And by 1969, there were 6 volumes of work on autogenic training with 2,600 scientific references. And it's a phenomenal tool for health, for making yourself healthy, because it retrains the nervous system. It is the epitome of self-regulation. And so 80% of people with a wide variety of diseases, from high blood pressure to chronic pain to migraines, etc., can bring them under control if they learn autogenic training. And once you've trained your own body in that way, then you know pretty well what's coming to you from your body and what you're picking up from somebody else. And I have done autogenic training now for 40 years. And would not want to be without it.
Tell me, can you elaborate a little bit on what exactly that means?
Can I do it?
Yeah.
Can I show you? Basically, you do each of these phrases very slowly, coordinating with your breath, breathing in for half of it and out for half of it. My arms and legs are heavy and warm. And you do that 5 to 10 times. My heartbeat is calm and regular, each of them 5 to 10 beats. My breathing is free and easy. My abdomen is warm. My forehead first time you practice that, your blood pressure pulse go down 10%. And, of course, with continued practice, most people will bring their blood pressure down to normal, blood sugar down to normal, et cetera, et cetera. And then, as you continue with that, Schultz pointed out, Dr. Schultz was a German psychiatrist who developed this, that you begin to have spontaneous meditative images, spiritual images. And so you begin to see, sense, feel, and know yourself and your connections with the divine.
Okay. So let me ask you this. There are many types of holistic healing. There's frequency medicine, there's hands-on healing, there's supplements, there's...
Well, actually, that's my next book called Energy Medicine, Future of Health, because everything's energy. And this is looking at non-drug, non-surgical, everything non-drug, non-surgical.
Is it important for people to educate themselves across the board? Because I have found when I talk to people, they learn one thing, and they think that's the thing for everything. Is it important to learn all of the other things, too?
I think it's important to be aware of multiple possibilities, because just as one size of a shoe does not fit everybody, one approach is certainly not adequate for optimal health. You know, nutrition is important, but it's not the only thing. Exercise is important, but it's not the only thing. Attitude is critically important because it allows you to choose all the other habits. But there are other things, and there are genetic predispositions. I always want to emphasize that although we in the alternative holistic movement talk about, you know, attitude and beliefs and all of these things, and they're critically important, one-third of all major illness, at least, has nothing whatsoever to do with your attitude or your eating or your exercise. It has to do with genetics. And so there are genetic predispositions. And the other side of the coin that most people certainly don't want to go near but should is karma. Because I don't think it's possible to have a major disease. Certainly you could have a cold and things like that don't have anything to do with karma. But I don't think it's possible to have a major disease that is not somehow related to an unfinished problem in a past life. And I know that doesn't shock you, and probably doesn't shock any of your listeners, but, you know, only one-third of Americans, quote, believe in reincarnation. And I don't believe in reincarnation. I know that's the way it is.
Yeah. I can't think of any other reason why people would be born as a child with a debilitating illness.
Well, those are the particular ones, I think, and especially all those illnesses that appear or, you know, that you're born with or appear within the first 7 years of life, they are inevitably karmic. But most other diseases, you break down in a part of the body where you had an emotional attachment to something from a past life.
Interesting. So let's talk about the different areas of the body, Norm. Do you break the body down into categories?
Oh, sure.
Does that make sense?
You know, you need to look at it from a, let's look at it first from a physical point of view. I mean, you've got your brain. That is the center of consciousness as it manifests in our day-to-day work. But into your brain come inputs from all the rest of your body, your eyes, your nose, your mouth, your ears, and the entire surface of your body. You can feel lots of things and see, hear, etc. Now, inside, of course, you've got the functioning of all the organs, like the heart. Well, you know, the heart is involved not just in love, but in judgment and lack of love, if you will, anger, although anger also affects the liver tremendously. So each organ has some emotional connection, but also all of these other things. So, you know, I think you really need to tune in and feel, truly feel the beating of your heart. And, of course, that's one of the phrases in autogenic training. My heartbeat is calling regular. You need to be aware of your breathing. Breathing should be free and easy. If it's not, well, you've got a physical problem with a physiological spasm of some kind preventing you from breathing free and easy. And then, of course, we have the most complex chemical factory in the world, in our abdomen especially. Not that every organ doesn't have chemical things going on, but the liver alone is producing thousands of different chemical reactions, and the digestion of the food and the absorption of food. So the stomach and the small intestine and the large intestine, for instance, you don't absorb magnesium until it gets to the distal colon. It's one of the reasons so many people are deficient in magnesium. They not only don't eat enough of it, but if they have a gut transit time of 8 hours instead of 12 hours, they don't absorb it. And so we have to look at all of those individual differences in the internal organs. And then, of course, our muscles and our skeleton and how we move and whether or not we use and exercise those parts of the body. Every part of this is critically important, ultimately, in health or lack of health. In general, I think we could say that there are categories of dis-ease that are created by problems. Depression appears to me to be the most common illness in the world. About 40% of Americans at any one time are actually clinically depressed. Up to half of them, or 20% of all Americans, are taking an antidepressant drug. And in general, my feeling about antidepressant drugs, I can't even say properly in public, they suck. They just are terrible and rarely actually cure depression. So if you're depressed, the problem is twofold. One, you feel that you were not nurtured adequately as a child. I mean, that's a basic feeling of a lot of people. And the other is anger, because you feel as if you were abused. And it doesn't matter what happened. What matters is whether you felt abused or abandoned or unnurtured. And that can develop a lifetime of problems. So if you have either of those underlying things, and I think 40% of Americans, in addition to being depressed, another 40% aren't quite clinically depressed, but they have what I call a subclinical depressive miasma. They're on the verge of depression. I mean, I just saw a man last week. He's 1 point from being into clinically depressed. Well, he's certainly not happy. And that colors everything that you, that changes your physiology. It changes your adrenaline production, your insulin production, your cortisone production, your immune function in general. Depressed people tend to have a weak immune system, for instance. So each of these things has to be looked at and felt. And so you need to get in touch with all of these aspects of your own body. And that's, of course, why I emphasize so much learning to listen. And listening to your body means not hearing it necessarily, but feeling it, sensing it, knowing what it's telling you.
I think that's a very important thing. So many of the people that I say I'll say, are you angry at your father, for example? And they'll go, no, my father was good to me. Well, it's not that their person took care of them. It's that the person didn't nurture them in the manner in which they wanted to be nurtured. And I think it's important for people to look at their lives and realize that.
Absolutely. Right on, Eva. I think that's the crux of the matter. Again, it doesn't matter what happened. It matters whether you felt loved, nurtured, taken care of adequately. And my sister is a perfect example. She was 2.5 years old when I was born. My mother had overactive thyroidism. She weighed 75 pounds when I was born. So she was frail. And all she had to do was brush my sister's side a couple of times. And within 6 months of my birth, my sister became quite fat. and depressed. And she died at age 58 of complications of obesity and diabetes. And 2 years before she died, the last time my mother, sister, and I were together, she accused my mother of rejecting her when I was born. And my mother said, I didn't reject you, you rejected me. You know, they had this cat and mouse thing of my sister felt rejected by my mother. My mother wasn't able to make it up to my sister. You know, and my mother cared. And my sister was never abused, but she never accepted it.
I think that's a very important thing. So let me ask you, if somebody, do you break it down if somebody has heart and vessel issues or somebody has gut issues or do you find, or soft tissue issues, do you find that particular kinds of events, people have particular kinds of issues in the particular system in their body?
Very common, very common. And there are several books that have been written on this subject that are really wonderful. One of my favorites is Who's the Matter with Me by Alice Steadman. No longer in print, but you can occasionally find a copy on the Internet. Marvelous. It was published way back in the 70s. She was the daughter of a physician, and so she really understood the importance of our interpersonal relationships and how they affect our organs. Louise Hay, of course, has written a wonderful book on the subject. And Doug Condron, C-O-N-D-R-O-N, has written a wonderful book that goes into these metaphysical relationships of various organs to attitudes, beliefs, etc.
Have you, just talking briefly on this topic, have you found that, well, let me just rephrase it. I've found when I do reading that about 7 out of 10 people have been touched inappropriately. And 5 out of those 7 people, the women will get breast cancer or some problem with their breasts and the men or uterus and the men's prostate.
I think my wife said once, she did not believe that any woman could grow up without having been at least flashed.
Yeah.
And in my own experience in working with over 30,000 people with chronic depression and chronic pain, 75% or 76% of the women were sexually abused as children, and 30% of the men. I found that unbelievable. Of course, when we look at the Catholic Church in recent years, we understand where a certain percentage of those come from, but it's certainly not just the Catholic Church. We know that abuse in that way is not uncommon and sad. I mean, those people need to be caned in public square, I think.
Yeah, totally agree. So let's talk about a few of remedies that you use, holistic remedies. One in particular is castor oil. What is it that castor oil, it works on a lot of things. How does it do that, and how do people use it?
Well, externally, not internally, is at the top of my list on the answer to that question. Castor oil actually is absorbed through the skin and cleanses the lymph system. And so, of course, that's a detoxifying procedure. I learned about castor oil because it was one of Edgar Cayce's favorite remedies, and I learned about it in 1972 when I visited there. And not that winter, that very winter, in December or so of 72, we had a horse who got a cut all the way around the ankle just above the hoof, and it wouldn't heal because it was winter in Wisconsin. And our vet wanted to put the horse down, and I said, let's put a castor oil pack on. So we took a Pampers, probably, and soaked it in castor oil, wrapped it around, put some duct tape to hold it in place, and the horse healed. And so my favorite use of castor oil is for things like that. It's phenomenal for abdominal problems, especially acute abdominal irritation, pain, diarrhea, whatever. It's phenomenal. It's excellent for the liver. It detoxifies the liver better than anything else that I know of. Knees.
Does it matter where you put it? Do you have to put it over your liver?
It's going to clean the local area more than anywhere. Now, Cayce of course, recommended castor oil packs primarily on the abdomen because of the liver influence. It's very good on the liver. But I learned, especially after our horse experience, that people who have an acute knee problem or even a chronic recurrent knee problem, wrapping a castor oil soaked pack around the knee, putting the plastic over it and an ACE bandage over it overnight, often the swelling is gone by morning. And I've seen huge numbers of people cure themselves, especially of acute knee problems, with a castor oil pack on the knee. Now, in the eyes, one drop at bedtime, now it needs to be done for 3 to 6 months, but heck, compared to surgery, it's like, doesn't cost much. One drop in the eye just as you go to bed, and the only reason you do it as you go to bed is, otherwise, you're going to, your vision is going to be blurry for a half hour because of the oil, but it actually will dissolve early cataracts. And
amazing.
It will dissolve. It's one of the treatments that Casey recommended for warts. So there are many, many local, topical, surface applications of castor oil. And one that I came up with, because I kept thinking, not only a castor oil pack on the abdomen, I'd like to have a castor oil suit. So I've created both a castor oil bath and a castor oil suit. So if you really feel as if you're getting the flu, for instance, one of the very best things you can do is take a castor oil bath. You put 1 cup of castor oil in the bathtub and fill the tub up just so, you know, you're soaking deep in it, and shake it around. Your skin attracts the oil, which is quite interesting. And you soak in that and for 20 to 30 minutes. And if that's all you're going to do, you wash off using a cheap shampoo twice before you try to get out of the tub. But if you really want it to work even better, you just pat yourself dry because the oil will stay on your skin. And put on an old sweatsuit or a pair of long johns you don't mind ruining, because you'll never get the castor oil out of the cloth. And sleep in it all night. Phenomenal in immune enhancement. And in fact, Dr. Lynn Wisniewski, a psychoneuroimmunologist at Georgetown or George Washington University, demonstrated way back in the early 80s that even a castor oil pack on the abdomen of someone who's healthy improves immune function.
That's wonderful to know. Let me back up just a minute, because I was flipping through your book and I found what I was looking for, the chakras. That's kind of where I was going when I said, do you break it down in systems? You break you go into problems that are related to each particular chakra. Could you cover that a little bit for us?
Oh, yes.
Give people an idea.
Indeed. Actually, let's just start with the most popular way to die. This is what I get. It's true. Heart attack, so-called. The fourth chakra. 75% of the people who die of heart disease have lifelong unresolved anger. Hans Eysenck did a wonderful study on that, on 13,000 people, where they identified people, let's say between the age of 25 and 50, roughly when they started, and followed them for over 20 years. And these were healthy people when they started. And 75% of the people who died in the next 20 years of heart disease had lifelong anger. And 75% of the people who died of cancer of any kind had lifelong depression. So heart disease is largely a disease of anger, unresolved anger. And cancer is, from a psychophysiological point of view, largely a disease of depression. Now, that's simplifying it. But let's look at the second chakra, because that's the other common place to have problems. The second chakra is associated with sexuality. Interestingly, of course, also finances and security. And so I often ask people who come in with low back pain, those questions. Do you have any problems financially, or you feel very financially insecure, or do you have any sexual problems? Because it is commonly associated with second chakra issues and then the pain coming up in that area. Now, obviously, there are always other exceptions. Accidents do occur, and other things can influence these, but these are the dominant types of things. And, of course, we could go into the fifth chakra, if you like. Oh, I'd prefer not to in my own life. But I've had more problems with my fifth chakra than all my other chakras combined. And back in 1973, when I had my first reading, actually January 74, from Bob Lightman, he said, "You have such a strong will that some people think your parents were robots." And I, of course, have always thought I needed to have a stronger will. And Bob points out that, you know, too strong a will creates problems too. So I've had three surgeries on my neck, various accidents that led to surgical interventions. And then, of course, almost 2 years ago, I developed hyperthyroidism from apparently a viral infection, and that led to hypothyroidism. But finally, I've recovered from all of it as I attempt to allow my will to be not quite so controlling.
That's funny, Norm. I know you. That's so true.
How can you say that?
We have about 20 minutes, and
reality is reality, isn't it?
I love you, Norm. You're the greatest person. I'm not being critical. You know that.
I know.
I love you. I want to talk about something in your book where you talk about when one reaches enlightenment, the individual comes out a sage, or prophet, or a saint. The whole character changes. His life changes. He's illuminated. And there are four stages recognized. Can you talk about, I just found that very interesting. Can you talk about that for a few minutes? Those stages?
You know, that's a very interesting aspect, isn't it?
Yes, it really is.
And I have been reminded of it so much in the last couple of months, because Abraham Maslow, who created the whole concept of self-actualization, which is the foundation of the whole humanistic psychology movement, said that a truly self-actualized person may have grief so briefly that if you're observing, a person watching might not see anything happening. And I thought I was a fairly, quote, and by his test, the POI, the personal orientation inventory, I am supposedly moderately self-actualized. But I got to say, grief that nobody would notice has not been part of my experience when I've had a major grief. So, and there is this interesting aspect of which I have attempted to study and understand since I first got into this back in 1972. If you look at one of my favorite books, The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which is the foundation for Raja Yoga, and it is the spiritual path of yoga. The goal is detachment from everything and to recognize that most of what we see and experience is, quote, an illusion. And I understand that. But, you know, I can't see any reason to be here if we're not here to experience relationships with other people. We're here to learn to relate to other people, and we do miss them when they leave. And we also, I think, the most essential human instinct is the desire to help other people. Unequivocally. I think we are, it's just in our genes. And if we did not get adequately nurtured or feel adequately nurtured as a child, then we may not be able to do that freely. But we still have that instinct. I've said for years, you know, if Adolf Hitler or whoever was run down by a car, most people would run out to help them. And that is our instinct to help other people. And so true enlightenment to me is knowing that, above all, that our goal is to be here to help other people, and secondly, that it also is to learn unconditional love. And that's a big problem. When I first read the book of Urantia, almost 20 years ago now, and I came upon that statement on page 656 or 8, love is a desire to do good to others. And I suddenly understood that love is not liking. Liking is nice, it's perfectly fine. But love is actually the desire to do good, to help other people. And to me, that is the ultimate phase of enlightenment that all of us should strive to do so that we can detach from our own kerfuffle enough to live that.
Do you think, Norm, that you can find the enlightenment, or do you think
I'm missing a word there.
Do you think that...
I'm going to go change phones, Eva. You caught me in the kitchen, and I think maybe I would ordinarily be on a desk phone.
Okay, go ahead.
And I'm going to change it because I think maybe this one's getting weak.
Okay.
Okay, you
ready?
I'm here.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Do you think, you know, when people first wake up, they find themselves going to classes and settings and reading, do you think that those things can bring enlightenment, or do you think that it just happens?
Great. You got some good questions. Both.
Thank you.
Both. I think for most people, it is a spontaneous thing. I'll go back and tell you how I began. Because when I went...
Remember, we have about 15 minutes. We have about 15 minutes.
Okay, great. This won't take too long. When I went to the ARE in 1972, I didn't know any of this stuff. I was a, you know, pretty traditional, conventional neurosurgeon, interested in alternative ways of helping people with chronic pain, period. And I learned about past life therapy. It wasn't part of the program. It was a sideline, if you will. I saw one. I had to have one. So I talked to the psychiatrist who did it, Lindsay Jacob. And I said, Lindsay, I got to experience that, but I'm not going to do it in front of other people the way you just did. And maybe I was a prostitute in a Greek war camp. I couldn't have that. But I probably was, or it wouldn't have occurred to me. And it wouldn't bother me now. But I didn't, in those days, it would have. At any rate, I had my first past life therapy session with him. And for 2 hours after that, I had what people call a peak experience, unity with the cosmos. That night, Joel Andrews, who is a trance medium harpist, marvelous harpist, was doing a concert for the 200 people at this program. And right in the middle of his concert, I'm up on the ceiling having an out-of-body experience watching the crowd down below. Well, how did I get up here? Well, that was the beginning of what I would call, what Andrea Pahara called the rupture of the mental hymen. And so, you know, before that, I was interested in helping people. I certainly had a great desire to help people, but all these concepts of communion with God and the soul and the divine and all that stuff, and I had no knowledge of whatsoever. So I think it's a combination. You can reach it through self-regulation exercises. In fact, Schultz said that people who have practiced auditing training for 6 months begin to have spontaneous spiritual images.
Do you think that that the way you wake up has anything to do with your religion?
Does
that make any sense?
Absolutely. I was raised by choice. I had a choice. My father was Baptist. My mother was Methodist. So I chose, because I liked the kids at the Methodist church, to go to a very, very liberal Southern Methodist church. We danced in the church on Sunday night. So I didn't have the inhibitions that a lot of people have. And so when I went to college and got exposed to a broader perspective at Duke Chapel with Dr. McClellan, who was a Presbyterian, but I began to see all the nuances in the various and sundry religions. So fortunately, I was open. Now, if one had been raised in a very rigid religion, and whatever it might be, certainly fundamentalist Christian, as well as Catholic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's harder, I think. On the other hand, if you look around the country and the workshops that I go to and that I teach myself, there's a disproportionate number of ex-Catholics, for instance. It's people who begin to understand the hypocrisy that has been placed upon them by all the religions, begin to break away from it if they are going to become what I would call super conscious.
All right, we have about 8 minutes. I'd like to ask you two questions that you address in your book. Synchronicities and then visualization. When people are trying to create, what is the importance of not just saying prayers, but visualizing what it is that you are trying to accomplish?
Well, I think it's critically important. For instance, when you're doing autogenic training, my arms and legs are heavy and warm. If I'm guiding that, I'll say, imagine you're in a perfect spot of nature and the sun is beaming down upon your arms and legs. My heartbeat is calm and regular. Image a pendulum of a clock or a metronome, calm and regular, et cetera, et cetera. So adding visualization to the words. You know, words are substitutes for images anyway. And so it's important to bring up the image and put it with the words when you're doing these self-regulation training exercises. And I think it does help. It's sort of a double whammy, if you will, approach to getting what you're desiring. Now, synchronicity is quite different. Carl Jung, of course, really wrote about this, and others have written on the subject. I've given a number of instances of synchronicity in my own life. I think perhaps the most critical one of all was when I went to Boston for my neurosurgical residency training. I only knew one person. We had interned together in internal medicine at Duke. And so I wrote and said, David, you know, I don't know anybody else in Boston. Would you like to have an apartment together? So we did. And he was dating the woman who became my wife. Now, when we would double date, I was jealous of David. I admit it. And he was Jewish, and I knew that David would never marry a shiksta because his parents were Orthodox. He wasn't, but his parents were. And so after several months, I said, David, you'll never marry that girl, and I might. I'd like you to stop dating her. And so after a month more, he said, okay, I won't date her, but you cannot date her for 1 month after I quit. And so a month, I started calling her, and a month after he quit, we had our first date, and 5 weeks later, we were engaged. And I think that is synchronicity. The meeting of her through the only person I happen to know in the whole city of Boston is a synchronous event that seems infinitely greater than chance. And there's no question in my mind, knowing that we've been together, she and I, in previous lives.
Go ahead.
Well, so we had a karmic attraction to one another, not from negative past lives, but from positive.
Synchronicities are road signs to the taking the right path?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just no question about it. There are many such things that occur in all of our lives, and it seems like, quote, coincidence. The Roots of Coincidence is another wonderful book on this whole subject.
It seems to me that if there are synchronicities that appear, if I follow them, they have never led me to a negative outcome. It's always something that is wanted or desired in my life. Do you agree?
I do, absolutely. You know, they are messages from or through the subconscious, or what I prefer to call the ever-conscious mind, that allow us to suddenly know. Or suddenly to know.
I agree. So back to the visualization thing. Many people think if you pray for something and you don't get it right away, then it's not working. It's not real.
Exactly.
It won't happen. So
yes, and
spending time picturing that thing, right?
Well,
and feeling it.
There is the real problem, isn't it? Our expectation of time. Now, here's a place where quantum physics may be the most important aspect, because you know, there's certain aspects of quantum physics that I really can dig. Even though I don't fully understand them, I can appreciate and believe. And for instance, this concept of the flapping of the wings of a butterfly on one side of the Earth affecting the weather on the other side of the Earth. I think about that almost every day this year, because I think, you know, we've got dinosaurs flapping their wings all over the Earth today. And you can feel the chaos in the energy of the planet. And I'm not one of those who goes out, you know, feeling everything, because I've trained myself not to, you know, allow a lot of things in that I don't need. But the chaos of the world today is a perfect example of this kind of energy that is affecting all of us. And so these synchronous events are very much of that. But we don't control the timing of what's going to come out of them.
True. All right, Norm, we've got about 3 minutes, and you get to talk about whatever you want to talk about in 3 minutes.
Well, I'd like to talk about just a couple of things. First of all, I'd like to invite people to sign up for my free email newsletter. It comes out every Wednesday, occasionally on a Friday or a Monday as well. And they go to normshealy.com. That's important because, you know, if they really want to know what I'm thinking on a week-to-week basis, it's there, and the archives are there for the last 5 years. So everything that I've written in my newsletters is there. Secondly, I do have a new book coming out certainly this month, I presume within the next couple of weeks. And it's called Energy Medicine, The Future of Health. Actually, it's my longest book, 373 pages. I couldn't believe it when I got the galleys. I've never written a book over about 250 or 70 pages. At any rate, it goes into all of the variety of alternative approaches that I think have proof behind them. Obviously, there's so many things, but I chose the ones where I think there's adequate scientific efficacy to make it worthwhile people knowing about. So people will be interested in my new book, and we're going to set up a system so that I will offer them downloads free when they, you know, send proof of purchase of the book of about 7 or 8 of my CD imagery, visualization, et cetera, self-regulation CDs. So to me, that's important because, first of all, I want them to have these tools, like autogenic training, and one of the package will be the basic tools, which is my autogenic training tape, or CD. And those are important. Now, also, I am powerfully, powerfully interested in conscientiousness, because it has been demonstrated after an 80-year study on 1,500 people who've been, you know, followed for 80 years of lifetime, that the single most important issue in being healthy and living a long life is conscientiousness. And so I'll be having lots of e-newsletters about that aspect of it. I'm developing a new test called the Shealy Conscientiousness Profile, which I'm in the process of validating, and people will have an opportunity to work on that, because conscientiousness ultimately determines whether you choose healthy habits, doesn't it? I mean,
yes,
to me, I'm more conscientious about my health habits than I am my office. I'm pretty conscientious, but my office is the one place where, well, I know where things are, but nobody else could find them. And that doesn't bother me. I mean, it doesn't feel to me like the mess it may seem to other people, because I can find things in it. And so my dresser top is another one. You know, it looks like a mess, but I know where everything is. I don't have to have it absolutely pristine, you know, organized. But
I would like to say one more thing, Norm, because we only got a minute left.
Right.
I'd like to just tell people to take a look at the Shealy Pain Pro, because it does more, and we've only got a minute, Norm, but it does more for you than just treat pain. It's important.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because it puts out human DNA frequency. And if we add this 1/1,000,000th of a watt per centimeter square of 54 to 78 billion cycles per second, which you certainly can't feel, although you've got other things there you can feel, it actually recharges your DNA.
Yes. So that's a very, very, I have one, and I know that it does amazing things. I was in a very deep depression, and I used that thing for 45 minutes like you directed, and within 2 hours, the depression was gone. I mean, gone. So you can always email me or email Norm to give you more information about that thing, but I got to wrap it up, Norm, because Donald cut us off.
Thank you so much, and have a great, great week, everyone.
Thanks, Norm, and come back when you get your new book finished.
I will. I'll
Good
get
night.
A message your copy. Thanks. Good night.
Oh, I'd love it. Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health.
Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.